Happy lunchtime and welcome to Real Talk. I'm your host, Susan McCabe. I'm here every Tuesday at noon to talk about whatever piques my interest or yours, dear listener. We've done all kinds of topics, including the history of women and the history of science and nature. And we've covered all kinds of stuff, and we're happy to cover anything you'd like. Just send a note to realtalk@voiceofvashon.org with your topic suggestion. Today, I am delighted to be talking with Kajwyn Berry. She is a longtime Vashon Islander, a poet, a photographer, a pilot, a photojournalist, a calligrapher, a novelist, a teacher, a painter, an adventurer, mother, grandmother, great-grandmother of six children, and she's a nonagenarian, meaning she's just hit 90 years old, and she's really filled those 90 years. She says she's lived a reckless life. Welcome, Kajwyn Berry.
Thank you, Susan.
Thank you for being with me today.
It's a joy.
Tell us the story that led you to lead a reckless life.
Well, first of all, it's because I had an aunt at an early age who, at menopause, regretted everything in her life. And she said, don't regret. She said, the only thing I should regret is things I didn't do. Well, that was good advice, but it sure does lead to, as I said, a reckless life. Because when you look, I have formed a habit of looking ahead. In 1 year, when I had a decision to make, would I regret not taking this step? And if there was a whisper of that, I'd go ahead and take it, of course. But I'd like to go back sort of to the beginning, if you don't mind.
Please.
And I grew up with this crazy notion that I was going to die before I was 25. And here was this smorgasbord of life. So many things to learn, so many things to look at, so many places to go. And I thought, boy, I've got to cram it all in as fast as possible because I'm not going to have much time. So I had two kids by the time I was 25. I had flown airplanes as an aerobatic pilot for quite a few years. And I'd gone as many places in the United States as I could manage. I just packed it in because I was so passionate about being alive. And I was so curious. And I think curiosity, that wonderful quality of human beings, that curiosity carries you through all kinds of vicissitudes. So anyway, I went happily along tasting everything I could cram into my little life. And I woke up on the morning of my 25th birthday and couldn't believe it. I was so stunned. I think I just sat there in a daze all day long, except for caring for the two little kids. And I thought, holy mackerel, I've got a life to live. I wonder how long it's going to be.
What am I going to do from here?
Well, I guess I better get on it. And proceeded to pour myself into almost everything that my curiosity brought before me with great passion. I know I was very perplexed in my 20s, wondering about the two meanings of, well, three meanings of passion. There's the passion plays about Jesus Christ. Mm-hmm. There's the passion we feel when we fall in love. But for me, the main passions were just about life, of waking up in the morning and looking around and thinking, okay, what's this day going to bring? How am I going to deal with it? And I was blessed early with a fairy godmother that said, this child will wake up every morning happy to be alive.
You really had a fairy godmother?
I had a fairy godmother, yeah. And she said, you're going to be happy to be alive every morning when you wake up. And I am.
I'm curious about how any individual develops that kind of attitude, and that's more from a psychological, biological perspective. Were you really loved as a child? Were your parents, what did they do to make you feel so good about life and who you are?
My father believed in everything that I did. He thought I could do anything I really cared about. Mm-hmm. And he backed me all the way. We used to ride. He was a cavalry officer in the First World War. We rode horses together. When I got so passionate about flying at the age of 12, he took lessons too. And my mother hated me. So that was okay. I just stayed out of the house all the time. And I either rode my bicycle for miles and miles, or I was in school, or I just rambled. I would go for miles. I would leave the house before my parents got up and on the weekends, and I wouldn't come back till dinner time, believe me. So I had the unconditioned love of my dad and the unconditioned dislike and really cruelty of my mom.
How did that affect your relationship with women?
I have loved women. I've had wonderful, well, I had my grandmother, and she was wonderful. In fact, I had three grandmothers, but one of them I was really close to and lived with for a couple of years. And so, you know, I've always loved women, even though I was essentially a motherless child. I had aunts and grandmothers and older friends of the family. So I was not unmothered, for sure.
You are proof that it takes a village.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But I think it made me even more ardent a mother.
Ah.
You know, a fierce, unconditionally loving mother. Yeah.
How you respond to life. What are the major satisfactions that you have experienced in your life? What are you most...
Raising three beautiful children. They're all good as citizens. They're all good parents. They're a joy to be with. We still work together and play together, stay in close contact with each other. I've crossed this country with my three kids 18 times, always taking a different route. And we'd camp along the way. And we've experienced this beautiful country before we ever went overseas. And those were times when those three and me knitted together a group of four that was just unbeatable. So I'm very proud of them. Each one of them has carved a life for themselves that I would never have expected, I don't think. And they've done it so well.
Were you a single mother most of that time?
Uh-huh.
Most of the time you were raising your kids?
Mm-hmm.
What do you have to say about the relationship a single mother has with her children as opposed to a mother who might be in a married relationship for the entire upbringing of her kids?
Well... You get the last word.
And that's not so bad.
Yeah, because they always went to independent schools where I frequently taught. And I never had any argument about what was going to happen to them or how they were going to be raised.
Uh-huh. So it's consistent.
Yes, it is.
Creates consistency.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you do work harder. You have to be mother and father and breadwinner. But, oh my, I remember when I was 15, I mean, when Duncan was 15, he looked at me one day and he says, "Oh, Mom, you've always worked hard, but you've always worked hardest with us." Which sort of redeems you for those hours when you're going to work and you think, "Oh, I'm not being a good mother," you know.
Oh, yes. So many mothers experience that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's about quality versus quantity.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
You have to keep focused on that one for sure. And I married some really fine men. It wasn't that. It was just that they wanted one thing and I wasn't able to do that.
And you got that fierce independence thanks and to that, your dad.
Yeah.
There are so many studies that show that women who have good relationships with their fathers, supportive relationship with their fathers, are far more able to achieve what they want in life than those who do not.
Well, I didn't realize I was going to grow up to be a woman. I cried on my 13th birthday because I thought, "Oh my God, I'm going to be like my mother." But it's been a joy being a woman.
What's the hardest thing you had to face in the 90 years that you've been around?
Oh, God, Susan.
Okay, name one.
Well, I was in a motorcycle accident when I was still teaching, and the kids were like 12, 9, and 7, and I was working full-time. And I was in a cast up to my ribs for a year.
From your feet up to your ribs?
Yeah, it was this whole right side. I was on this motorcycle, and the guy didn't know how to drive it, and we got hit head-on by a car coming down the hill. Mm. And I went flipping up and came down on the handlebars.
Broke a lot of bones.
So that was a hard year.
That would be an understatement, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Did your kids jump in and help you?
Oh, of course. No, they still do.
What happened to the guy?
Hmm?
What happened to the guy?
He went away.
We're talking with Kajwyn Berry, who is a nonagenarian, and I have known her for over 20 years and gained a great deal of wisdom from her. One of the...
Excuse me, Susan, you have gained no wisdom from me. I don't have any.
Oh my God, that's what this show is all about. You're going to have to shut down early.
Pity.
No, one of the best things I learned from you was that age is only a number.
It is only a number.
And that we are as old as we feel or as old as we think. And you have been what some people might call a job hopper.
Mm-hmm.
It's
true.
You've had all these careers. Tell us how you chose to move from one to another.
Curiosity.
About?
The next one.
Where did you start?
Where?
Yeah, what was your first career? I think you said... aerobatic pilot?
Yeah.
How did you get from there to journalism, if that was next?
Well, I was teaching. I taught first through sixth grade at Catlin Gable in Portland. And I was teaching a curriculum subject, the first one in the nation, of italic handwriting as a curriculum subject, first through sixth grade.
What kind of handwriting?
Italic handwriting.
Oh, italic. Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
Because Lloyd Reynolds at Reed had been my mentor. And it was highly successful. And I was also teaching at the Portland Art Museum School, drawing and things like that. I didn't like the 9-month job. It was pretty prosaic after a while. Once you had it and you got it all organized, then I'm good at starting things. I'm not good at keeping them going. Sometimes I'm good at ending them. But it felt to me like the world was richer than that. And I got started reporting for a weekly newspaper. And there were things I couldn't write that I could photograph and things that I could photograph and that I couldn't write. So I became a UPI stringer, and then I became a Time Life stringer. And then I won the International Advanced Photojournalist Picture for the best picture of the year from Life magazine.
What was that a photo of?
Hmm?
What was that photo?
It was, oddly enough, if you remember Life magazine,
yes,
was on the cover, and it showed this bride holding her hand out in her new ring to the little flower girl who was standing on her gown, and all behind her, it was all about hands. She's doing this gracious thing, and behind her is the new groom twisting his ring, and the father-in-law handing him some champagne, and the bridesmaid fixing her hair, and it won the first prize for a commercial photographer.
It
opened a lot of doors, yeah. And it was after I won that I decided that I'd explored the air and explored the land, and I wondered about those great blue oceans. So we bought a boat in Martinique and lived in the Caribbean for a little over a year with the family. And then we came home. Excuse me. We came home to do some computer work in Portland, and pirates stole our boat.
Pirates stole your boat?
While we were gone, yeah. So we didn't have a boat to go back to.
In Martinique?
Actually, by that time, it was in Antigua. What we thought was a hurricane hole, and it was, but the pirates thought so too. Disappeared.
Wow. So you were landlocked.
Well, kind of, yeah.
And so this was with your three kids. How old were the kids then?
Well, then Duncan was 18, 17. And so Bonnie was 20. And then Bonnie left the boat and went to sail across the Pacific with her honey. And David left the boat and went back to Oregon and started his own construction business. So Barry and I were left on the boat, and we sailed around and learned all kinds of things. And then, as I say, we left it because Barry wanted to do some computer work in Portland with a friend. So we thought we'd just stay up here for the hurricane season. It just turned out to be more hurricane seasons than we thought.
So that's how you got to the Pacific Northwest.
No, I came to Reed College in Portland.
Oh, I see.
Years and years and years before.
So you were going back and forth.
Oh, yeah.
You said you learned a lot of things when you sailed around the world. What did you learn? What do you remember most?
I remember most the idea that you were on your own planet. You had to keep up all the systems, water, energy, health, everything. You were minutely responsible for every single minute of the day and night. And what really bugged me was there was no time left to paint, to write, or any of those things that I feel are worthwhile in my life.
It's like camping all the time.
Oh, yeah, it is. It's more than that, because camping, at least you have some fallbacks. You know, you can go into town and go to a park or something. True. But you can't on a boat. And at any minute, your anchor may slip and you're at sea.
Wow. So,
which did happen to us once.
The basics of life are what take up your entire day.
Yeah.
No leisure.
And your dream at night.
It's kind of like being an early human.
Yes, in many ways. But even though you can drink in the beauty of tropical places and experience the people there, which, you know, it's always the people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've grown to love the people in Burma, in Vietnam, in Thailand, and people all over the world are so kind and open if you let them. If you look at them and listen. I think if you listen. I'm a good listener. I'm talking right now, but I'm a pretty good listener.
And we're listening. We're all listening to Kajwyn Barry on Real Talk on the Voice of Vashon at 101.9 FM, KVSHLP, Vashon Island, Washington. I'm Susan McCabe, your host for Real Talk. And Real Talk is possible thanks to support from Windermere Vashon, who makes not only all our community information programming possible, but also our emergency alert service possible. When you just said something that sparked my interest, and that was people are kind everywhere.
I found that.
How would you get that across to, clearly it's travel that has taught you that.
Yes.
What would you say to folks who maybe don't get to travel so much? How can they open their hearts to people who are different?
I just think if you can somehow come to the realization that at heart, even people who act in an evil fashion, there's a goodness someplace in them if you can only find it. And sometimes it's damn all hard to find it. Right now I have trouble with quite a few people, but we won't go into that one.
clearly you are not short of opinions. I know this about you.
Oh, God.
Yes.
I hope I'm short of judgments, however.
Tell us the difference.
Opinions, you have an idea about something. Judgments, you say what's right or wrong about them. And that is what divides so many of us. Oh, I'm right, you're wrong, or he's right and he's wrong. And then you make this judgment, and then you have to stick to it. And then the barriers and the fences and the walls get steeper and steeper.
And what's the difference between judgmentalism and using good judgment to make decisions?
It's quite different.
Tell us.
For instance, I mean, I grew up in New England. No culture can be more judgmental than New Englanders. It's been a struggle all my life. not to be judgmental because it's so rude. You don't know what's going on with other people, really. You know, they may be having a bad day or they might just have cancer or something. I don't know. So you just, again, it's listening. But maybe it's listening more than with your ears. Maybe it's listening with your heart.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know really any answers for that, Susan.
Taking each person at face value. I want to bring into our conversation before it gets too late, Gail Kellner, who is here in the studio with us and has provided a number of the questions I've been asking you. Gail, I see you taking notes over there. What would you like to ask Wynn?
Well, you know, it's so lovely to sit in on this conversation. Thank you, Susan, for inviting me, and thank you for sharing about your life. I think I would like to know what it's like or how it has been as a woman to have, I'm guessing, just doing some quick math, you were born in about 1927, and here we are in 2017. How has your life as a woman been impacted by sheer place in history and how that has changed over time?
Sure, what?
Our place in history, the time that you've lived
through. Well, it's
been
damn all hard. We only got the vote in 1917. God. I've worked politically for women's caucuses, trained, taught women candidates how to speak,
mm-hmm.
Done PR for them. I just feel very strong. I'm a very political person.
Uh-huh.
And I think that it is so tragic that women are not valued as a whole. I think that's why Clinton lost. She was a woman. Mm-hmm. You know, and isn't that sad?
Right, right. Yeah. Half the world is untapped. You know,
a little bit more than half. I mean, we live longer.
That's right.
As you sit here.
And it's, speaking of the strength of women, though, I'm really against drafting women. I'm against putting them on the front lines. Not that they're not capable. Of course they are. They're damn good fighters. But because they are the future of our generations.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think it's wrong. Because if you have women, a lot of women with PTSD, they're going to raise their children with fear.
Mm-hmm. And anger.
And anger. And mm-hmm. that is a tragedy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That will carry on for generations.
That's a very interesting perspective.
Right.
What about the impact of what has been done to women as far as raising their children? The abuse that many women have experienced just because they're female. Or the injustice that you've both mentioned.
Well, it's horrible.
And how do you think that affects the way children are brought up in this country or anywhere for that matter?
I don't really know because I don't have an overview of that. I mean, I've been raped. I know what it's like.
Mm-hmm.
Twice.
Uh-huh.
And you simply have to get on with your life. And it's not easy.
And try to keep your heart open.
Well, and you think, I mean, I thought, an educated woman like me, this can't be happening to me.
Mm-hmm.
What did I do? What did I do?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And that says a lot about the position of women.
It does.
And how they approach positions of authority, for that matter.
I just had to get over it.
Mm-hmm. What did you do to get over it?
I don't know. Did things I loved, talked to people I loved,
and did
more in my work because that gave me validation, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You can answer your phone.
It's not my phone.
It might be yours, but
oh,
that's
dear.
All right. That's all right. We can wait. We can wait.
Somebody's phone, but it's recorded now.
So it is.
Speaking of technology.
Yes.
You have witnessed a vast expansion and explosion
huge.
Of technology.
Oh, God, yes.
I know you've learned to use it. How have you kept your mind open to the changes in technology? And what has been the most advantageous to you, the most beneficial to you?
Well, first of all, when we got home from the Caribbean, we came home because of the internet and sensing its enormous capabilities and the possibilities of bringing the world together and communicating. Mm-hmm. I mean, which was so exciting then. I mean, so I've been, when I first got into computers, you had to remember strings to get on, you know. Oh, Lord. And I think that the possibility of communication is so wonderful. I mean, I stay in contact with friends. I'm on Facebook. I talk to people in Burma that who won't get my mail because they're you know, thrown away if I send them a letter. And so isn't that remarkable?
That is remarkable.
It's wonderful. Mm-hmm. No, I embrace it fully.
How have you used technology in your art?
Oh, that's an interesting question. How have I used it in my art? I don't think I have. No, I mean, as a master calligrapher, most of my focus is on ancient languages and their way of communicating. I mean, talk about communication. Writing is the first form of communication. Mm-hmm. And to do it beautifully is a great pleasure.
Integrating, yeah, what you have to say with how you say it in terms of the visual.
I truly, when I'm calligraphing, I hold the meaning of each word as I write it. Mm-hmm. And so it's the graphic symbol of its own meaning when it's calligraphed. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the internet and all the advances in technology are really just new ways to write, to deliver whatever you've written, to deliver that kind of communication. Are they not? Are they? Mm-hmm. I see them as tools.
Yeah, well, you know, Steve Jobs took lessons from my teacher at Reed.
Oh, really?
Well, we would have a much different alphabet on the internet if it weren't for Steve. He learned that you had to have white spaces between letters so that you could read them. He learned that as a calligrapher with Lloyd Reynolds.
Hmm. And did that get into programming then?
Oh, yeah. That's why he invented the first internet alphabet.
Really?
Before that, it was virtually impossible to read. P's and B's looked just alike, and they'd all smooshed together. There was no space between them. I've seen it, and it was just horrible.
So yeah. I've learned at least one completely new fact today talking with Kaj Winberry.
Not wise, you notice. Just a new fact.
A new fact.
Okay.
I'm going for the wisdom, too.
Tell us why you push away, and respectfully so, perhaps, but why do you push away the idea of passing along wisdom?
Because I don't think I have any. Mm-hmm. I can pass along laughter. Mm-hmm. I can pass along love. I can pass along what I hope is understanding. Mm-hmm. But I have no sense that I have wisdom. So how can I pass it along? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Empty pockets, darling.
Right. If you were to tell us about a lesson, a life lesson that you've gotten in these 90 years, what do you think would be the most valuable lesson you've learned?
God, Susan, I don't know. They're all been valuable.
I'm trying to get the wisdom.
Yeah, I know. That's what I'm saying. They've all been valuable.
So we have 1 minute left. What do you look forward to?
Waking up tomorrow.
And what do you think you'll do with tomorrow?
Well, I'm hoping to get some calligraphy done, actually. And I have a painting I want to finish. And I'm really hoping I stop coughing.
I want to thank you so much for spending time with us. And thank you, Gail, for joining us. It was a delight having you and your curiosity.
This has been fun, pleasure. Both of you. Thank you so much.
You know, the old curiosity killed the cat. That's a big lie. I think that's what gives the cat
but
nine
cat's
lives.
Got nine lives, exactly.
Right.
Or 90. Right. So thank you both. Very nice.
Thank you for joining us.
It was
You've
great
been
fun.
Listening to Real Talk here on The Voice of Vashon at 101.9 FM, KVSHLP, Vashon Island, Washington. And I like to mention that our theme music is original and written by Luke McQuillan. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week, Tuesday, at noon. Join us for lunch and Real Talk.